My Car Guru is on the air for this Monday morning, not the previously recorded one that you heard a little bit there of. We are live with Lenny Lawson, who's on the phone. Hey, Lenny.
You know, sometimes we just push the wrong button.
Well, this button pushed itself, so I had to deactivate it, kind of. So that's what happened there.
All those self-pushing buttons. Mm-hmm. You know, every time I get into my 2020 Ford Ranger that I'm driving now, there's a button I have to push.
Mm-hmm.
After I start it, of course, that's a push button. And then, you know, once it recognizes that Lenny is back, and we head down the road, the first stop sign that I get to, the engine shuts off. And I just do not like that auto stop start thing. And so there is a button that I push to deactivate that. And I do it every time.
Yeah.
You know, it's designed to save gasoline. I get it. You know, where your car's sitting there idling, there's no sense having it sitting there idling at a traffic light or something like that. But sometimes I wonder, what if this thing doesn't restart? Bad place for it not to.
Yeah.
No, you don't have anything that has that, do you?
No, but we rented a vehicle one time that had that, and I just didn't like it at all. I thought to myself, well, this, I don't know, it can't be good on the engine, as good as if it was just running all the time, I wouldn't think. Seems like it'd be a little harder on some of the components in the engine, and I don't know about the gas mileage either. I don't know if that would be better starting and stopping, you know, like that. And I understand why they did it, but I don't like it at all.
Well, with all the problems going on in the world today, that's pretty minor, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. That's just a personal preference type thing. It's a me thing, you know, and I just don't like it.
Well, I think there is a workaround, at least there is on the F-150, and I'm not supposed to say this, but I think there's a plug that is underneath the dash that a customer pointed out to me, and he said he did the research and found if you unplug this, then that won't happen anymore. And I said, well, does it deactivate anything else? And he said, yeah, your taillight, your brake lights don't work. I said, well, probably shouldn't unplug that then.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So that's just one of those things. What a weekend. I mean, I just had the most fun. Tara and I took care of the grandkids this weekend. Well, two of them. Abby decided to go a weekend away with the girls,
mm-hmm.
to Pigeon Forge, and she regretted it the minute she was headed out the door, just simply because she missed those youngins.
Mm-hmm.
But Henry and Ivy got taken care of by Pop Pop and Nanny this weekend. We went to the, I thought it was going to be a relatively small event, but I was wrong. We went to the Greenville Airport where they had a cruise in and fly in.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had probably not every plane that's out there, but a lot of airplanes on the runway. They had skydivers, and they had just a lot of cars, a lot of really cool cars. And you know, of course, you go around to the car show circuits in East Tennessee, you're going to see some of the same cars every now and then. This had some pretty unique stuff out there, so it was kind of fun. And the minute we got there, there was a loud noise, so Ivy kept her hands over her ears the entire time. I said, Ivy, there's no noise. She was having none of it. She kept those hands cupped over those ears the entire time. But it made for some interesting pictures. So,
oh, I'm sure. Now, give me the ages of Ivy and Henry. How old are they?
Ivy's 3, mm-hmm. and Henry's 1.5.
Okay.
And so we, you know, Abby is, of course, as any mother should be, very serious about protecting her kids in a vehicle. And so we had, Abby drives a big Expedition EL, which is an extended length Expedition, and my wife drives a Lincoln Continental. And I can see why people want a big SUV. Those car seats are huge, they're heavy, and they're not easy to change over. But, gosh, you know, that is such an important thing, though, to get those in there and get them in there right. And one of the things that parents need to think about, though, you know, a lot of vehicles have leather seats. I don't know if it's very possible that more vehicles have leather now or simulated leather than have cloth seats. But so important to protect those seats. Abby has these very hard fabric like covers that go over the seat before you put the child seat in there and strap it down. But you know, getting those things locked in there and tight, you know, so that there's no movement, and then making sure the belts, you know, that are around the children are flat, you know, and cover their shoulders, and that the little thing that goes between their, the little clip, you know, that joins the two shoulder belts together is positioned right. I mean, there's a very specific process that you're supposed to go through to do that. And I think we're in, sometimes we get in a big hurry, and I don't, but we collectively get in a big hurry and we don't get them in there good.
Mm-hmm.
And gosh, I was riding behind a car last week and the kids were just jumping around in the back seat. And obviously their ages were such that they should have been in some type of a, at least a booster seat, you know, something like that. Not flopping around in the back seat with the, going, cruising down the bypass at 60 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So let's, you know, read the instructions, buy the best seat you can afford. I wonder, Tim, are there agencies out there that if you can't afford a good car seat, that they will provide it for you? Do you know anything about that?
You know, I think there are. I'm not sure exactly, you know, specifically who they are, but I've heard of that in the past, that if, you know, families can't afford one, that want to be provided. I'm sure the THP would have more information on that if people, Tennessee Highway Patrol, if people wanted to get in touch with them, you know.
You know, because those things expire. I know that, of course, my wife and I have been riding bikes a lot. I recently bought a new helmet, a fresh helmet, and she got her electric bicycle and got a new helmet for her. And they've really improved the technology in those things to prevent concussions or help against concussions, but they expire, you know, because the plastic over time degrades, becomes brittle. And so car seats do too. They always have an expiration date. So if you've got car seats that you've been using, your grandparent, and you're using the same car seats that you used with your kids, you might want to check the expiration date on those things and go get a new one. And they definitely have ratings for those as well, Tim. So, you know, it's just something we can do to protect our little ones, because they certainly are precious and they can't protect themselves.
All right.
So that's something that we need to take seriously. Well, we'll take our first break and we'll be back here in just a minute.
All right. Back here on My Car Guru. It's a Monday morning edition with the Car Guru, Lenny Lawson.
I walked out into the new showroom that they're building for me, the Nissan showroom. And, of course, I noticed this last week, but it's just, I've been kind of fuming about it. There's a beam that comes down that supports the whole structure that I didn't notice until they actually did all the framing, but it landed right in the middle of a window. And I am so bummed out about it. You know, when you build something like that and you've got pretty complex plans, you can imagine. Mm-hmm. An expensive structure like that, it's easy to miss something. But my goodness, I don't see how the architects missed that, and the engineers and everybody that designed it. But I sure did. So I put it on Facebook and had a bunch of friends, different people, responded to it. And they gave me all kinds of cool ideas that I can, you know, actually hide it with. One of them suggested I painted an outdoor scene on it that looks kind of like what you see out the window. And they even did me an example of it with their computer. So thank you. Thank you. My heart is lifted this morning because I might be able to get around. I could put mirrors on it, somebody said.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But it's quite obnoxious sitting there. But it's easy to miss something. You know, it's easy to fall prey to your distractions and not look at things carefully enough. At least we didn't have any doors open into nowhere. And we did realize there was another engineering mistake that was going to really affect the parking lot. So I ended up costing an additional $28,000. You know, like that's really nothing. in order to fix this mistake. And guess who gets to pay for that?
I would imagine you do.
That's right. That's right. So anyway, that was just a really an engineering error, but they don't have accountability for that. That's up to the person that's doing it to be able to, I guess, read blueprints and so forth. So anyway, there's all kinds of little pitfalls that we can fall into as consumers. One of the pitfalls that people fall into is thinking that buying online is a secure, safe process.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking specifically about buying a car online. The Better Business Bureau says that you can still be deceived, and we see it all the time, Tim. If you go to 5 different Chevrolet dealers' websites, you spec out the exact same Silverado pickup truck. You find the same truck on everyone. Every one of them will be priced differently. Some of the dealers will just put the MSRP up there and subtract the rebates and call for your final price. Others will have all of the discounts listed, including their discount, and then have a different price. All of those are ways that that dealers, I guess, they express their independence and they're hoping to lure somebody to come in and submit what we call an internet lead and possibly be able to leave something to the unknown so that the customer really does have to come in order to finalize the transaction. Now, you can buy a car totally online. You don't even have to show up at the dealership. They'll deliver it to your front door. But just because you're buying it online doesn't mean you're getting the best deal. And that's one thing that people really need to understand. It may simplify the process. It may lower your anxiety level. It may make you feel all warm and fuzzy inside. But it doesn't necessarily mean you're getting a great deal. Now, you still need to set a budget. Before you find out, which car is for you, you need to understand what your budget is going to allow you to do. And that's just simple numbers. Can you afford a $30,000 car? Can you afford a $50,000 car? How much money down do you have to pay out of your pocket? When it all's said and done, you're going to take that amount financed, and you're going to divide it by so many months at such and such interest rate, and that's going to determine what your monthly payment is. And if that monthly payment doesn't work, then you're going to have to lower your sights a little bit. I tell folks, don't ever buy a car based on the monthly payment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. If you go into the dealership and you say, I want a $400 a month payment, and that's all you say, then who's to say that rather than financing it for 60 months, they don't stretch that out to 84 months and just calculate that and see how much more that's going to cost you overall. So, find out what you can afford from a dollar standpoint, what your overall time frame is. Some people keep a car for 3 years. Well, you don't want to finance a car for 84 months that you're going to try to trade in 3 years. These are just the common sense things that people don't practice. But set a budget, and then start doing your research. What types of vehicles will fit into that budget range? I was looking at just like Abby's new Expedition. I think the retail price on that thing was in the mid-60s. Now, you can get an Expedition that's almost $80,000 or better. If you completely load it up, but obviously she couldn't afford that, and what she did, she ended up leasing it, and it got the payment into the price range that she needed, and that is an alternative for a lot of people. But do your research and find out what you can buy for the money. There are some folks that they want to take advantage of. They want to get an SUV. They've been riding around in a four-door passenger car for a long time, and they just don't have enough room, kind of like putting car seats in the back of a Lincoln versus an Expedition. and they want to get an SUV like their neighbor has, but they can't afford a Chevy Traverse. I mean, they'd love to have one, but their budget won't allow them to have it, so they end up needing a Chevy Equinox or maybe something even smaller than that. But you have to know what your limitations are. And then I recommend, if you're going to buy online, just get pre-qualified for a loan. If you call Eastman, for Tennessee Eastman Credit Union, or your local bank, Citizens Bank or Mountain Commerce, or any of the regional banks that are in East Tennessee, if you have a loan officer, find out what you qualify for. Get them to pull your credit and, you know, look at and see what your, you know, what they would be willing to loan you the money for as a percentage interest rate. And then you know what you're capable of. And if the dealership quotes you a higher rate, then you know that you have an alternative. But getting pre-qualified for that is important. You can do that through the dealership. You just have to do a little research on your own first, just to make sure that that they don't play games with you, because there are a number of dealers, and even in this market, that that will play games and will charge you more interest than what you could qualify for if you did it on your own. And then start searching for inventory. You know, dealers, Tim, if you came into me and said, Lenny, I want a Ford Edge, and I want it in yellow, and I want a green interior. Of course, they don't make that, but if you wanted something specific that I didn't have, I can get it for you.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of dealer trades. You may have your favorite dealer that's down the street, and you search his inventory. You know, let's say it's Johnson City Honda, and they don't have the Honda Civic that you want. They can get it for you if you really want to buy it from them. Now, if you find it in Knoxville, yeah, you can drive all the way to Knoxville and buy that thing. But if you really want to buy it locally, you can. Just give them the opportunity. Now, will it cost you more? Well, it's possible. If they have to go all the way to Texas to get a vehicle for you, then probably they may have to charge you some transportation costs. But more than likely, they're going to find it within a 100-mile radius, and most dealers won't charge any kind of delivery charge. They just absorb that. And so, you know, don't go out of the Tri-Cities to buy a vehicle, or out of, you know, this Upper East Tennessee, when you really don't have to. You don't have to go to Atlanta or to Michigan or someplace like that to get what you want, because if you work with a local dealer, they will work with you. They want your business.
Mm-hmm.
And it is more convenient, you know, to buy in East Tennessee if you live in East Tennessee. Wouldn't you agree with that, Timmy?
Absolutely. Buy local, and it's a lot more convenient for sure.
Well, it's convenient, and your sales tax dollars stay local, and it benefits this region and the employment in this region. I think that we need to think bigger sometimes and think about what are the larger ramifications of our decisions. Again, speaking on the internet, when you're communicating with a car dealership and you're trying to do it all online, you're speaking with a receptionist or with a salesperson, an online salesperson. These nice ladies and men that answer the phone there, they're no different than the people that you would interact with if you walked into the dealership. They're just using the phone, and they use text and email to communicate back and forth with you. It's just a different type of transaction, but it's still the same thing. And, you know, the price is still negotiable. The lowest price that you see online is probably not the lowest price. So if you're, you know, if you want to negotiate, most people don't want to, but if you want to get a better deal, more than likely you're going to have to make them an offer less than what they're asking you. And it's very possible they'll take it if you're reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So these are just a few things that you need to think about. But the final thing is, before you buy any car, test drive it. You should, and even the Better Business Bureau talks about this, always test drive a vehicle before you sign the final paperwork. You know, you never know. I mean, new cars will occasionally have a rattle in them. They might have a scratch. They might have some type of a, maybe that vehicle's been there a long time and the tires have flat spots on them and they won't go away. I mean, most of the time those flat spots will, as the tires warm up, the vehicle will smooth out, but sometimes they don't if it's been there long enough. Mm-hmm. And so these are all just things you need to, just important reasons why you need to test drive something before you buy it. You may test drive it and say, you know, this car is noisy. Hmm. You know, this car has excessive road noise or something like that. And if you've already signed all the paperwork, they've delivered it to your house, maybe it's too late. And it's better to find that out before you leave the premises. So test drive a vehicle and then complete the sale and take delivery of it. And hopefully you'll be able to enjoy that experience, but understand that buying online is not 100% the safe thing that a lot of people think it is.
All right. Good tips there, and we'll be back and wrap up the final portion of My Car Guru right after this. And back here to wrap up My Car Guru for this Monday morning, Lenny.
Tomorrow we're going to talk about one of my favorite car categories, and it's the history of the station wagon. You know, everybody, not everybody, but most people have a memory of a station wagon. And they grew up with in suburbia, and their parents drove a wagon that may or may not have had wood grain down the side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, during the break, I asked Tim what his first experience was with a station wagon, and it was, Tim?
57 Chevrolet station wagon, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep,
the Nomad wagon was a two-door station wagon back then. And, you know, I know my dad used to drive the big Caprice and Impala wagons. I think the first wagon we ever experienced was in 1962. My dad had an Impala station wagon. It was the new body style for 62 through 64. And, you know, that's what American families traveled in. And so we're going to talk about the 20 best American station wagons ever made, and we'll do that tomorrow.
That'll be a lot of fun and bring back a whole lot of memories, because I tell you, I have a lot of memories of all the station wagons, and there was many that my father had that riding in the back of them, you know. You talk about people jumping around without car seats. Well, back then, you know, we were kind of jumping around in the back of wagons. But
we didn't know any better.
Didn't know any better. That's just the way it was. We were ignorant, I guess, as we've been talking about. But anyway, that'll be a lot of fun. We'll do that tomorrow on My Car Guru. Hope everybody has a great day. Lenny, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
We'll see you then.